We all remember that day. For some, the pain will never fade.
When I was a kid, I always wanted to be my dad. What if that happens? What if I become him and I don't even know it?
Also, what was with, you offering me your Oppenheimer digital code was such a way to just, you know, brag about how you have an Oppenheimer on 4K, meanwhile it's sold out everywhere.
Yeah. No. Honestly, you don't want it.
No, because that wasn't coming from a place of, you know what, let me reach out to Bo, or in this case, Ruben, because you know what? I know he loves Oppenheimer. It's his second favorite movie of the year.
All right, well, two things. One, I just had the digital code. I'm just like, what should I do with this? I was thinking of like just giving it away, but I'm like, oh, let me see if you need it first before I just handed it off. So you're
welcome. Your digital code. You know, you keep it. That's why it's there. It's part of the Blu-ray experience.
What do I need a digital code for if I have the Blu-ray and the 4K?
Are you not aware of all the people that are stealing Blu-rays and 4Ks? Sneaking like into your house? They got the rope. You know how they do the whole rope thing? They come down gently on the rope and they replace that with a disc of some other bullshit. It's a Kids Bop 17.
Yeah, I like to
that's
see
been happening throughout the country.
They better come correct. You know, I got that thing on me. My lightsaber from Disney World doesn't have batteries.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're really confident. You're thinking like it's going to light up. It doesn't light up. And
if someone broke in and it's in the pitch black and all you hear is vroom. Like for a second, they got to think like, that's not real, is it? But for a second, they might think it's real. Like, fuck. Broke into
I told you to check if there was a Sith in here. I told you, no Sith houses. What the fuck?
It's a shitty-ass apartment. Darth Vader's stingy on the payroll.
Yeah, he blew all his money on 2 Death Stars. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Nerd Soup. I am Bo Oliver, joined here today with Aaron, the Nerd Soup Monkey, and we are back to talk about Invincible Season 2, Part 1. So we did our non-spoiler first 4 episodes review, and everybody was like, how the hell did you guys see the full season already? And we were like, well, we haven't, because they only sent us the first 4. And then they released the first 4 to the public, so now we're all in the same boat. But I'm excited to do a little spoiler discussion about these first 4 episodes of Invincible Season 2. Because I really enjoyed them, and I think a lot of people out there did as well. And I think you enjoyed them too, Aaron.
Yeah, doing the spoiler-free is just the same, basically the same thing as me asking if you want my digital code for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, it was. Craig. It was like us.
I know you don't have it, but we do.
Some people do take it that way, but it's really, you know, just capitalizing on the fact that we had them early and, you know, put it out there for the world. That's the whole process.
Well,
not usually for us, but
yeah. For the big wigs.
No, yeah, it is the same. I feel like I had another point to make about Invincible, but now I just don't remember. But as I said, it seems like most people are enjoying it. The Invincible social media accounts have been getting a lot of traction. I don't know how the streaming numbers look, but I imagine that's information we will get one day, or maybe never.
Bragging about like 10 billion streams.
Oh yeah, Invincible, most popular show in the world after Suits. New shows on Netflix, too, that are popping off. They're just too many shows, honestly. It's too much. We'll also be taking some fan questions around the midway point, because we got a lot of good ones. And, yeah, you guys can follow us on social medias, at NerdSoup, at BoSoup, at NerdSoupMonkey, on most platforms. Aaron, you got anything you want to plug?
No.
You want to just plug
really.
Your Oppenheimer?
Yeah. I just want to plug that I have the 4K. I mean, I was ready for pre-order. I mean, I got the Icon Edition. I guess some people didn't want to pony up, but...
So how much did that cost you?
It was like $40, which isn't that bad, I don't think.
No, it's not terrible.
I thought it was a steelbook for some reason. It's not, but you get a little... The flaps open, and you get a little... It's cool. I'll probably never look at it again.
Glorious. It does... I heard the transfer to 4K looks very... very pretty.
Oh, it looks fantastic. I want to watch it on your TV. but without you.
I'll just, yeah. Right, I'll just give you the keys to the house. I'll charge you. Charge you for the popcorn. All right, well, let's just jump into Invincible Season 2, first 4 episodes. Man, Omni-Man's back. Look at that.
Thicker than ever.
Did you see the video of Steven Yeun voicing Mark?
Yeah.
So his performance there was incredible. It's when he first reunites with Omni-Man, and all the anger, but also the he's happy to see his dad. He embraces him, but it all just comes pouring out. His performance was incredible. But I thought that whole sequence of him like finding out what Omni-Man was up to with his new family, it's just so funny, dude. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. It was like Three Stooges. Oh yeah, I'm on this new planet and I have a wife and we have a kid. It just kept getting worse and worse, and Mark's like, no fucking way, dude. Just in total disbelief, you know, having his world, he's had his world shattered, his perspective on his world shattered so many different times.
No, I mean, that's one of like the craziest moments of the first four episodes of the season is just reunion, because like we said, like last time we saw him, we kind of, or when we talked about it on the spoiler free review, just the absolute beatdown his father gave him of monumental proportions. And like in those first moments seeing him again, you don't know how to act. Do you view him as the man that you grew up most of your life idolizing and loving and being that strong father figure in your life? Or do you view him that as that last memory of him of just completely showing his true colors and causing devastation not only to you, but your mother and the world around him? And you kind of got both of that, where in that first moment, he reverts to being kind of a kid, but then kind of like, wait a second, you're not the man that I thought you were all these years.
Yeah, and I think one of the best aspects of the show is how likable Mark's character is. You know, he is childlike at times, but it's never obnoxious. He's just very, very likable. You want to root for him because he just seems like a dude trying to fit into Omni-Man's shoes without becoming Omni-Man. And as I said earlier, his worldview has changed so many different times. He's been lied to and manipulated by this man. But then he does find out when he's talking to Andressa, Omni-Man's new wife. And that's another brilliant part of the writing is, you know, Omni-Man's in love with this humanoid bug. And she turns out to be very thoughtful and understanding. And she tells Mark exactly what he needs to hear in those moments. And you're like, yo, is Andressa kind of cool? I didn't know she was chill like that.
Would.
Yeah, no, 100%. So when she tells him, you know, Nolan can't say it to you, but he's told me how much he regrets what he did and how much he misses you and how much he loves you. And we got a fan question just to skip ahead. Somebody said, you know, I think Omni-Man's very sympathetic because everything he's done, as horrible as it is, was to protect his children. And I think even going back to the end of season one, yeah, does he take it too far? Yeah, I think everybody would agree with that. But it was because he thinks that the Viltrumites are going to come to Earth and possibly kill his son if his son doesn't get on board with this. And then we see that reckoning at the end of episode four when they set it up like it's going to be a training arc. Another brilliant part of the writing is, oh, we've seen this before in superhero shows and anime, whatever it is. We're going to train you up so you can fight. And then the alarm starts ringing. The Viltrumites are already there. And I thought that fight was brilliant. So yeah, you know, just one episode between Mark and Omni-Man, but you get a lot out of it emotionally. And what those characters are dealing with individually and obviously how it ties together since they are family.
Yeah, for sure. And like, even though everything isn't resolved, like seeing them kind of be on the same side at the end was kind of like cool to see. Even though, like you said, as much as he may regret it or whatever his intentions were, it's hard to like fully redeem that character so quickly in those moments. But you do kind of get back to that, like, you know, it's Omni-Man and Mark again, kind of like early season one when Mark's just trying to figure out his powers and his dad's trying to show him the ropes. And to see them together on the same side after what happened was cool to see. But I think looking forward to most is kind of seeing after that dust has settled, like what the real road to, I guess, coming fully back to where they were and if it could ever be that way. And we kind of seen in that flashback and to begin the episode, we do know that it's an alternate universe, but that could be a potential foreshadowing of what's to come if Mark really does get back and align with Omni-Man. Maybe not in the same way, because it seems like he's on board with, I guess, Omni-Man's, what we saw at the end of season one, like just taking it by force, but maybe he does sort to kind of nudge towards the side of his father and realize maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an interesting way to think about it, because it seems like they were trying to establish in this universe Mark's an outlier because he doesn't team up with his father and he doesn't take over the world, but maybe it's just delayed. He's not to that point yet. And I enjoyed the Angstrom character. It seems like people were a bit mixed on Angstrom Levi, voiced by Sterling K. Brown, but I like the way that it was riffing on Kang the Conqueror and the current obsession with the multiverse throughout superhero storytelling and movies in general, movies and TV in general. So I always like that different look at the alternate universe when Superman goes bad. And we've also seen that many, many times. We've really seen it with Omni-Man as well. But that's why I enjoy Mark's character so much, because it's the road to becoming Superman and the temptations to go to the dark side, because power, it's an easy way out. But seeing what Angstrom's character had to deal with in his universe, where Omni-Man and Mark take over the world, the post-apocalyptic world where you have Adam Eve looking all rough and rugged, and he's trying to get some answers. So he teams up with all the alternate versions of himself. You know, they're not even trying to hide it here. It clearly is Kang. Who knows? But I enjoyed that. And I thought the voiceover performance by Sterling K. Brown was awesome.
No, he has an excellent voice. I think the problem with some multiverse stories is I feel like it makes the main story a little insignificant to a degree, but I feel like this one, they did a good job of using it to kind of expand and show other possibilities without really taking away from what's happening in your main plot. And sometimes that's a tough thing to navigate, but yeah, I don't think I don't think that aspect takes away, because I still think they can focus in on like the small, they focused in on the main storyline, like I said, and with that, keeping a lot of the smaller elements to help drive the storyline. Because when you get cast so big of a net, it's hard to really, or you might lose focus on some of the smaller character things that really, I think, makes this show good. So I'm glad that it didn't get too chaotic by expanding that and focused on, like I said, some of those smaller character moments, specifically with Mark. And I think we get a lot of those early on with the relationship with his mother and his relationship with Amber and his friends, and just how he's dealing with everything. I mean, kind of just lifelessly going through his, like, almost feels like chores to him, you know, going out and saving people. It's not, he's really not finding enjoyment in helping. It's more like he's just doing it to show himself, or maybe show others, that he's not like his father.
Right. Yeah. And I think I guess in a way he's doing it for selfish reasons. So he's trying not to be like his dad, but in that regard he is, because Omni-Man played the part of Omni-Man because he wanted to be respected and loved by these people, and he wanted his own family. He was running away from his responsibilities and leading this double life. And I think Mark is, you know, obviously too, it's obviously what Mark is doing is not going to hurt as many people. I mean, we've seen the struggles that he's had with Amber, but I also like the way that that relationship has evolved and grown. I think the writing in season one, people overreacted to it, but it was kind of weak. And in season two, it's just, like I said, it's grown up. They've graduated from high school now, and she understands what he needs to do as a superhero, and that's something that she's learned to accept. So I just like their interactions better this time around in season two, flirting and then fooling around, and then they decide to have sex for the first time, and she's like, oh, you know, are you sure you're not going to just accidentally kill me? Like, I thought that was funny, and I think their interactions have become just a bit more natural, a bit more loose. So I don't think people are going to cause an uproar over her character this time around. And I was pleasantly surprised by how much attention they showed, how much attention they gave to the character of Debbie, because that's somebody that you can give her one, two, three scenes and you kind of get the gist of it. But she's really lost to her grief and her depression. Same thing with Mark. Her entire worldview has been flipped upside down. And it's something that's very difficult to grapple with. And it's one of those things that time heals all wounds. And you see the strain that it's put on the relationship between Mark and Debbie, because they've both sort of retreated into their own corners. And it's sad to see them so isolated, because even though they still have each other, they've lost a part of that family dynamic that they will never get back. So it's just a new world, a new life for these characters.
Yeah, especially, I mean, like such a traumatic event, it's easy to, you know, I guess it's a shared event, because I think it's equally as damaging for both of them. But it's just the fact that it is shared that I think makes it a little muddled at times, because what Mark thinks he has to do versus what his mom thinks he has to do kind of conflict each other. So that's where a lot of those tensions arise from. But some of the moments too, just seeing her at least have someone to talk to with, I forget her name, but
Olga.
Yeah, Olga. It was nice seeing her have that moment where she can kind of unwind a little and feel maybe a little retreat from all of her. And I think that it is a lot of grief and depression, but then equally as, you know, kind of fucked up seeing how she was treated by that that man at the support group, that she is getting unfairly blamed for what Nolan did and having to carry that around.
Yeah, that was fucked up. And that's why the writing for her character, it sucks what she's going through, but it's been so strong because she thinks that she's found a friend, somebody that she can relate to and talk to openly about this, somebody who knows what it's like to be married to a superhero. And then it slips that she was married to Omni-Man. And for so many people, that's just going to be unforgivable. That's why it's so hard to imagine the idea of redeeming this character. But I really love the scene that she had with Mark Hamill's character Art, the guy who makes these suits, when he tells her, "You were what was grounding Omni-Man. He needed you way more than you needed him. You were fine before Omni-Man showed into the picture. Obviously, he's a stud, good-looking dude, best superhero in the world. You know, why not?" But we've seen it with what Omni-Man went through during those flashbacks after the events on Earth, that he was ready to give up. He was ready to kill himself by throwing himself into that fire. And then he has this chance experience to save the Thraxans' lives. But it really was Debbie and Mark that were grounding him as a father, as a loving husband, just as a human, no longer a Viltrumite. So I really thought that was a great pick-me-up. Sometimes those moments can feel a little goofy and unnatural, but what he had to say to Debbie I thought was really important for her character, for what she had been going through up until this point. And once again, just to compliment the writing, she's a human, she has no powers. For me, she's had one of the strongest arcs over these first four episodes so far. And Sandra Oh, the voice acting in this show, even though it's mostly them just doing their own voices, but sometimes that can sound lazy, like they're not really into it, that they don't know how to sort of, you know, capture those same emotions as if it were in live action. But I thought all the voiceover performances in season one, now carrying over to season two, have been perfect. And more importantly, the casting of these characters has been perfect because their voices, they just fit. They just work beautifully. Yeah, so Debbie's been... you can make the argument that Debbie's been the MVP of these first four episodes, and that's something that I did not see coming. Just because her moments are the ones that stick with you so far. Like you said, with the support group, and then the scene with Olga, the scene with Art, the moments where she's just breaking down, right? That there's really nothing else you can do.
Yeah, I think Donald's the MVP.
Well, talk about a storyline that many people are saying, is this necessary? What is this going to lead to something else? Because that's how I'm kind of seeing it, as maybe there's just way more secrets that Cecil's keeping from everybody. And this is the first breadcrumb.
That's just, I couldn't even imagine that experience, just watching your own tape of your own murder. Like, oh, well, this is weird.
I would have been like, can I get this with subtitles? I can't watch anything without subtitles. And then they subtitle it. Oh my God, I was killed. Yeah, that's just been a weird, superfluous little subplot floating around season two. And
I think
not too jarring, but it's definitely noticeably out of place.
I've always liked him, so it's good to have him back. But yeah, to the larger point, I think it's just Cecil and the role he plays, and kind of, I think you mentioned the kind of Nick Fury type character he plays. But it's funny because they say, like, with Nick Fury, like, his secrets have secrets. I think with Cecil, that applies more to him, because I have no idea what he's about. And maybe it's just what it is on the surface. Like, he's trying his best to kind of maintain order and try to protect Earth. And sometimes you got to get a little dirty to do that. And he's willing to play hardball.
So Donald's also invulnerable now, right?
I think he's just a problem. He's about to join the Guardians.
Yeah, dude, Cecil, like, if I'm ever in a pinch, that's someone you want on your side. But also, I know that man's got some skeletons in his closet. I can't imagine the things that this man has done under the guise of doing it for your country.
In this world, you know, sometimes you got to play a little dirty. Also, Immortal, I guess he is immortal, but I don't know anyone who deserves that nickname less. He just keeps fucking dying. Comes back. So yeah, I guess he's immortal, but he's also kind of fucking useless.
Yeah, immortal. Could be put back together. They really pieced him up in that one Oh, that first scene in the alternate universe.
Yeah, alternate again, just getting fucking worked.
Well, that it looks like that's permanent when you squish somebody's head. He's just been getting worked throughout history.
I like him in the Guardians, though, with that group of characters. Because he thinks he's like the, I don't know, just his aura. I'm not a fan of him. Even when he was grilling Mark up and down. It's like, yo, back off my boy.
Dude, I don't know what it is, but your girlfriend cheating on you with an older man just hurts so much more. Because it's just something that you can't be. And, you know, you have to just wait to become an older man, you know? If it's somebody else that's your age, it's like, okay. Maybe I'm just not bringing enough to the table, but I you know, how am I going to compete with the immortal? Talk about older men. He's like 3,000.
Nah, yeah, that's tough. And especially because just so many.
Poor Rexplode. Rexplode's a funny character, too, because he was so insufferable in those first few episodes of season one. And then you sort of came to appreciate him because he was learning how to be a hero. He was maturing. He was becoming one of the leaders of the group. And now he gets betrayed by Duplicate. That it hurts especially because she can make like four of her, and that just to know that got away is devastating.
And then he gets all of them. He can't even throw me like number eight.
Well, they I don't know if she maybe if they wanted to get freaky.
Yeah,
but I imagine there's sort of a hive mind there, you know.
If I was him, I would just replay him getting worked by Omni Man. Be like, yeah, this is your boy, the immortal. What a joke.
Just got to stitch him back up. Dude, I was so happy that the Mahler twins finally knew which one was the real clone, and then he ends up getting fucking poisoned.
I love them. Just
keeps getting better. And I said this on the non-spoiler, I always love how their talents, their specialties are incorporated in the main storyline because they're promised something that never comes to fruition. But they end up helping out the main characters or the main villains, whatever it is. They're just mercenaries. But they always end up getting screwed over. And that I thought that was a great scene, too. And when Sterling K. Brown's character is trying to explain to Mark, this needs to happen. I need to collect all this knowledge because on my planet you're a goddamn dictator and we need to kill you. And those moments, they always make you want to scream because you know that this character is doing it for a good reason, but Mark could never know that unless they sat down and talked about it. But that's the other side of superheroism in this world is you think you're doing a good thing, but you're really just hurting good people.
Yeah.
But I think that's an important lesson Mark is going to have to learn.
You think you would get along with a bunch of like yous?
No, because I hate myself.
That's what I was thinking. That would be a terrible idea. Just imagine a bunch of me's in a warehouse trying to do a common goal. It should work out because you're all you and you probably should be like-minded. But I feel like it would just be, I would hate myself. It would be such a mess. I know what I can do by myself. Times that by 100? Mm-mm. Don't like that.
Yeah, at that point, we're all just going to be annoyed with each other. Like, why are we just all sitting here on the couch?
Yeah, but think about how many Oppenheimer codes I would have.
Oh, dude, you'd be like the Willy Wonka of Oppenheimer codes.
Yeah, because I know all my boys got the code early.
Just pulling up to your old high school, handing out Oppenheimer codes.
That seems illegal.
In the context of like an athlete returning to the school with like sneakers. You know, like when you get your jersey retired because you went pro?
I took it as like the, you know, the kid who graduated 4 years ago but still sells drugs to all the high schoolers.
It's an interesting Rorschach test that we just did. I was thinking, you know, it'd be a big ceremony. They named the movie hall after you.
So yeah, give me your lunch money for this Oppenheimer code.
You guys got any weed? Yeah, poor Mahler twins, as I said. Well, poor, at this point, who knows who is who. But he's got the genius idea. He's like, why am I only making one clone? I can make a bunch. And the other guy's like, yeah, I'm going to steal that idea real quick. That's just going to be a never-ending battle between the two of them.
And it's so funny how they're like, probably the smartest people in this world, but just get hung up on the stupidest shit.
And talk about an iconic voice. This series has got a couple of them, like Clancy Brown, coming back and voicing the Viltrumite general that we saw at the end. I love that. He was Damian Darkblood in season one. But for the Mahler twins, Kevin Michael Richardson, you've heard him in every adult animated show, kid shows. He's had such an illustrious career when it comes to voice acting. And he's truly one of the best ever. It's just such an iconic voice. And I don't know who voiced the female Viltrumite general, But that's another voice that's super iconic. Like, you've heard her in so many things.
It's a good blend of, like, people who you can tell are established voice actors and have been doing it for a while, then people who are big names in, you know, the live action world coming into voice acting that aren't necessarily, you know, it's not apparent. You know, sometimes you get these big name actors to go do a voiceover performance and it's good, but you can tell that it lacks some of the emotion, or the weight of the words don't really translate from when they're acting on screen versus doing a voiceover performance. But I feel like there's none of that in this show.
No, yeah. Like, even Ben Schwartz as Shapesmith, the Martian character from season one who came on over to Earth and now he wants to join the Guardians. That's another fun little thing about this show, is that there are all these potential storylines. There's potential there for something chaotic happening with that Martian character. We don't know, you know, is he just going to become like a hero on Earth, or is he going to fulfill his duties as a Martian and try and take over the planet? Because we saw what happened on Mars in season one. So that's fun. And I think Ben Schwartz, he's one of the better guys in Hollywood, where it's very much just his voice, but there's a lot of personality behind it. He's very emotive and expressive. And it's just a great voice for a character like that.
I just did something. It's not like legally wrong, but I feel like it's morally wrong. I just hopped on Wikipedia and they were asking me for donations, and I already donated, which I didn't. I actually
donated for the first time.
Did you?
Yeah, I felt so bad. I was like, you know what? Here's $3.
I said, thank you for your donation. I'm like, ugh. It's funny because it's Wikipedia, but imagine if that was like St. Jude's. How much of a scumbag I would be. Good stuff.
Yeah, no, I gave them $3 because I was like, yo, I use Wikipedia all the time. They, you know, what's $3? Dude, so Rhea Seehorn voiced Andressa. She's Kim in Better Call Saul. You ever hear of Better Call Saul? It's a spinoff of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah. That ran for like, what, 2 seasons?
Ran for 6 seasons, actually.
Got canceled, all right.
They say that's where the story is supposed to end, but I don't know. Who else was I going to talk about? Oh, Peter Cullen as Thaddeus, the leader of the Coalition. Once again, another, what's going on there? So we get this whole backstory about Alan, how he was raised to be a fighter, and then he can't even beat a Viltrumite, no matter how strong he is, because those Viltrumites are something different. And he's given the task by Thaddeus after convincing them that Mark's on their side to snuff out the Viltrumite mole. And then he gets his ass kicked. And then Thaddeus unplugs his goddamn recovery machine thing. What the hell? That was a lot. That was a great episode.
That was a great episode. Seeing Alan get his fucking break speed in was tough.
Once again, another celebrity voice actor who's just amazing. Seth Rogen, it's just his voice, but he's so good at it. It hurt to see Alan get beat like that because Alan's such a good guy. You know, he's just Alan. And they changed the title card for him.
That was awesome. I love that. And in the first episode when they kept teasing the Invincible title drop and they didn't.
Yeah, that was really funny.
I enjoy things like that because it is like a funny bit, but like it doesn't take away from the show at all, where it like it brings you out of it, or like it's so ridiculous, like in other, and it's a, you know, it's not a apples to apples comparison, but like a Simpsons or a Family Guy where their humor is so outrageous and breaks kind of what's going on in the main show. Like that's kind of their style, but it's something that does kind of break a little and is a little meta, but also works within the confines of the series.
Yeah, when Peter Cullen's character first showed up, I thought, man, this guy's just always cast as the ultimate good guy in every role. And I thought, maybe they're doing a little switcheroo here. He's actually evil. He's secretly working for the Viltrumites. And then what he did to Alan there, I mean, that could mean several different things. Maybe he is a good guy, but Alan's a pawn that is no longer useful to him. Better off dead. Sort of situation. Getting your ass beat like that in front of your girl is always tragic.
It's fucking tough.
It's really tough, dude. That's one of my worst fears. Just getting my, well, first of all, being in a relationship and then beaten to death.
That's a layered one. I mean, at least you die after. You don't have to live with your own failure.
Right. No, hopefully I would die in this hypothetical situation.
Yeah, like, you know those memes? It's like a big, jacked, like, bodybuilder guy. It's like, this guy slaps your girl's ass. What do? It's like, I don't know. I guess I'll have to fight. Like, in that situation where you're like, you stand up and just get your ass kicked, what do then? So I pull out the lightsaber.
That's a crazy hypothetical, dude. Jack guys are usually very respectful, very sensitive. I've never met a big jacked guy who was a douche. Like, do we know any personally? Do we know any, like, just jacked guys? I'm trying to think who in my life is a jacked guy.
Teddy?
No. Teddy's just a big guy. That's your asshole. The big guys who are just, like, big, you know?
Yeah.
No, Teddy, if Teddy wanted to, if he went on, like, a Batman training regimen and just only
ate.
Haven't
seen him. When's the last time you seen him?
Was he only eating, like, chicken and fish?
Yeah, he's doing this. He's doing what he made fun of me for doing. He's like just eating healthy. We were out doing a golf simulator, and he didn't order anything. Didn't get any of the tacos. The taco truck outside. Wanted no part of it.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that, Teddy. All right, guys. Before we get to the second half of this review, we're going to take a quick break and shout out our sponsor for today's episode, and that would be Uncommon Goods. If you're tired of disappointing your friends and family with terrible gifts during the holiday season, Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your Secret Santa or your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. These fine products are often made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S., They have the most meaningful and out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere, and I was pleasantly surprised to see how wide-ranging their selection is. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar items, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same lackluster gifts you can find just anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date. And I am someone who likes to focus on unique and memorable gifts for the holidays, so it's been really fun scouring the Uncommon Goods website to find some stocking stuffers and gifts that people will remember. They've got all sorts of knickknacks. One item in particular that caught my eye is a portable campfire. This is going to be a gift that I give for myself because I'm at the age where I'm just a gift giver, not a gift receiver. So you have to treat yourself every now and then. And this portable campfire is awesome. It comes completely set up. All you have to do is light it. And when you're done with it, you just put the lid on top and it lasts for 3 to 5 hours. So you can make s'mores anywhere, right? Portable s'mores. Or you can go for something funny like happy and sad socks. Get that special someone in your life a pair of socks. I'm sure they'll really appreciate it. So, in order to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nerdsoup. That's uncommongoods.com/nerdsoup for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We are all out of the ordinary. But yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen there. And I like this idea of the Coalition and the Viltrumite War. You know, I don't think that's a spoiler. I think that's where the story is headed. So him having to convince the Coalition, the Council, whatever it is, that no, Mark is actually on our side. He was raised on Earth. Maybe that does come back to bite them, depending on where Mark's character goes. But I'm really interested and intrigued by that whole storyline. I'm a sucker for the big epic fantasy battles. So you have this incredible force that's just wiping out planets, conquering planets throughout the galaxy. And you have this resistance that's standing up against them. Or maybe the Coalition are terrorists. I don't know. I guess it just depends on how you're looking at it. So that's interesting to me. And the fight that we talked about in the beginning with Omni-Man and Mark taking on these Viltrumite generals. The first fight, Omni-Man loves that chop move, huh? He loves chopping people in half. He's fighting Lucan. It is very effective. But dude, okay, so there's so many things that we could talk about when it comes to this fight. I thought it was terrific. Mark getting his finally moment. Where Omni-Man talking to him like a dad. She's out there tearing you apart, Mark. What are you doing? Typical Little League dad coaching from the stands type of advice.
Yeah, except this time you're not swinging and missing a 40 mile per hour fastball. You're getting just wrecked in the face.
Dude, and you see the ponytail and you're like, she's going to stabby stab with that ponytail. That's just not a regular ponytail. And she was piecing him up. But the moment when he realizes, yeah, I'm not on Earth, I don't have to hold back, that was awesome. Like I said, it's been 2 seasons of Mark getting his ass kicked. Like when he goes to Atlantis and he has to fight to the death and he's just getting wrecked again.
I mean, hey, that's the best way to learn, right? Is through failure.
But I said this before, I liked how they teased, oh, we'll train you, you know, we'll build up your power, and then they just show up. So you're thinking in those moments, oh my God, they're so fucked. Like, maybe Omni-Man's going to be able to carry the team. And the way that he keeps looking over at Mark, it shows that he does care about Mark. And he's, once again, he's doing this for his new child that he has with this Thraxon. But when Lucan shows up to break Omni-Man's back at the end, that shot is so epic. He came out of nowhere and he's like, fuck you, man. Just stomp this man's back.
That's the thing with, like, and I've seen it a lot of people online disappointed in a 4-episode season, then taking a break and having to come back. But we even said it with Attack on Titan, like, these breaks are easier to digest when you get like these massive, massive epic battles that look so good on screen. Because if it is rushed and looks bad, I think it detracts a lot from your show, because when it is that well put together and just pops off your screen like that, you kind of forget about, like, yeah, the wait sucked, but it's here now, and this is pretty great. I'm having a good time.
Especially after that, especially when you get something as good as what we got in episode 4, because it reminded me very much of those last 2 episodes of season 1. Just absolutely epic spectacles.
Yeah, and that's probably what contributed to the wait, because, like, I would have been upset if it's like, all right, let's train you. Then they train and the episode ends and that's the cliffhanger. Then you're right, kind of like, oh, well, we've got a little more left to be desired here. But
yeah, and then you see it with Mark. He hesitates to kill the Viltrumite. So she's able to stab him in the gut. And that's one line that Mark is not ready to cross. He has that moment where he looks around at all the dead Thraxons, and that's what inspires him to fight to kill. But when he gets to that point, he just can't do it. So is that a liability, or is that something that's going to separate him from the Viltrumites in a positive way? Because he's able to see the humanity and the people he wants to protect, but also his enemies. We don't know. In that moment, it was a liability. And I think that's the difficult game you're playing when you're trying to save lives. And they're really like generals at this point. You know, it's like you're fighting in a war. And I guess in war, you want to kill your enemies, but...
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Go on.
Yeah, especially with part 2, seeing what Mark does. I mean, he's basically put into the position his father was in. And that's kind of always a fun thing to delve into, is seeing two characters given the same situation, same circumstances, but how they approach it and what they do differently to differentiate the two. You know, I think speaks volumes to who both of these characters are. And if he ever does get some, you know, flirtation there to kind of act more like his father, if he's in a position where he has to choose between his mother, his friends, his girlfriends, and has to make a decision where he's doing it to protect them and everybody else is looking at it as he is doing the same thing that his father did.
Yeah, so the Viltrumite general tells him his name is Craig. So there we go. Weren't we talking about Craig? We were talking about Craig in Attack on Titan. That's Mikasa's husband. So yeah, he tells her, like you said, you know, you got to take on Omni-Man's job. You got to prepare these people to be conquered. Based on what we know about Mark, that's not something he's going to agree with initially. But yeah, if it means putting his family in danger, putting his friends in danger, maybe it's the right thing to do from that perspective. Bad thing for the planet, good thing for my people.
Well, he might not even have to do anything when he looks at those sorry bunch. Like, oh, the immortals, your leader? The Viltrumites have no problem. Like, my preparation is done. It's basically ripe for the taking.
Remember Battle Beast from season 1?
Yeah, that was my boy.
I wonder if that's like the way that, you know, getting him on the team is how you save Earth. Because that motherfucker was vicious. And I have to imagine he's somebody who can, you know, put hands on the Viltrumites. Because he looked way stronger than a character like Alan. And Alan, you know, he got pieced up. He wasn't holding his own. But it took a while for him to get to that point. So you imagine somebody like Battle Beast maybe would be able to handle them. That would be a fun team up.
Yeah, it's like the Viltrumites comments is like Rexplode. It's like, yeah, I think they can. I don't think Mark has to do much. And
dude,
he's like, hey, you know, I prepared. I did what you told me. But they didn't have to lift a finger.
The Guardians are so fucking weak compared to these Viltrumites. What do you think about Adam Eve in these first 4 episodes?
I think she's a very strong character. And I need to go back to watch the film they did.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet. It's just one of those, like, sad. I mean, just seeing what she had to do and why she, you know, had to leave home because of her relationship with her father. I just don't get it.
Yeah, no, the Adam Eve spinoff will definitely answer some of your questions there.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's essentially her origin story.
Okay.
It's fantastic, dude. It's like a very much inspired by Akira, but the fighting is great. You can honestly argue that the Adam Eve spinoff is the best thing that the show has done. It is so good, and it's fast. It's only 60 minutes, and yeah, I feel like her character in season two is a bit less memorable than she was in season one. Kind of, is it getting repetitive? I don't know, but I think having seen Adam Eve, it definitely helps it, and maybe that's a conscious decision that they've made. We gave her a 16-minute backstory, so she doesn't have to be front and center in season two. Not even front and center, but not as, I don't know. It felt like she wasn't playing as big of a role in these first four than she played in season one.
No.
Like, she's just doing her own thing.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of something you can fall into when you do split a season, because let's say 8 episodes over the course, maybe there's more there for character that they kind of have to ease into. But when you cut it at 4, it just feels like not enough was done or could have been done. And you're only allotted these 4 episodes. So there's a lot that you really need to get into. And maybe some storylines and characters are pushed to the second half of the season, but it just feels a little more off when it comes to splitting it up and taking a break for a few months. But
right,
I think she's a character where, like, when you think about potentially where this is heading, like, kind of, you know, Mark, I don't think is going to be someone who's going to just listen to the Viltrumites and let them take over Earth. Like, maybe we get a whole, I gotta put together a team type deal. Even though she was handled pretty easily by Mark in the alternate universe, this is a different character, obviously, with, I guess, maybe more time to grow as a person and with their powers as well. But her skill set, like, seems like it can be a problem. Like, can do some fucking damage when push comes to shove.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I like the way they're kind of setting that up. They're teasing these really powerful characters, like I said, with Battle Beast and also Adam Eve. If there is going to be this big blowout, you imagine those are characters that would play a major role and whatever this coalition is whipping up in terms of resistance. You know, I also thought it was interesting how Engstrom essentially sacrifices his own world for the time being to save Mark's life, because he sees the Mahler twins about to kill them, and he stops the transfer prematurely, and he kills all the different variants of himself, and he's scarred now for life, and he vows to get revenge on Mark for fucking up the transfer. So he did something heroic. It left him with you know, a body that has been deformed, and now he's, you know, he's become a villain. So once again, doing something heroic, saving somebody else at the expense of saving an entire world, those are the choices you have to make. And maybe he chose wrongly. Maybe you just let Mark fucking die. Like, fuck him, he's not my Mark. Was there a reason that he saved Mark? I can't remember. He needed him for something? Maybe I'm just giving him too much credit. I'm like, oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah, this guy I met for 20 minutes.
I know, yeah. Man, I fucking love this guy. You know, it was dark, though, when Engstrom talks to the alternate version Mark about how they stopped Omni-Man and Invincible. And he's like, yeah, they lost, like, that's how they lost Europe. Like, oh my God. Sounds horrifying. Okay. Yeah, I guess you still got six continents left. 5 of life.
Like, in his notebook, he writes Europe? Question mark. It's like, maybe.
How far into Europe? Are we going to the to the Caucasus? Do we still have the Caucasus? Because we could deal with that. Said it perfectly initially that the multiverse is there to just give us information, but it doesn't take away from the main story.
UK sitting pretty because of Brexit.
I know, right? Yeah, no, they're an island.
We're good. We're chilling.
All of a sudden, they're just running back the civil war between them and the Irish. They're like, all right, let's settle this. Now the rest of the Europe's out of the picture. Who runs this island? All right, well, you know what? Let's just take some fan questions because we've got some good ones. This question here from Full Sure Wood. What do you guys think of the animation of season two so far? So we had another question and they were like, do you like how the animation looks kind of crummy? And I think they're just talking about the whole, like, the entire aesthetic of the animation. I mean, I don't mind it in that regard. And I also, you know, maybe I'm just I need to pay attention more, but I didn't really notice any bad animation in season two.
No, me neither. I'm very bad at like picking these things out.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. This is a picture of the thick Omni-Man busting it down while Mark's passed out, bleeding after getting his ass kicked.
I would totally. Omni-Man throwing it back like that, that's crazy.
Who makes this shit? Who's just like, yeah, Omni-Man, I'm gonna crazy stuff.
Sickos.
But yeah, I don't think the animation style is bad. I think it's very intentional to match that of some of those cartoons that we kind of grew up watching. Because it does fit like that same style. Even if you watch Adventures with Superman, it's kind of the same thing in the same style.
Right, yeah. And I've never really minded the whole Saturday morning cartoon look of it all. As I said, I think sometimes we don't realize that these things are intentional. It's not like they drew it this way and they just suck at animating. It's supposed to look a bit old school, a bit cheap. Maybe that's not the best word for it, but it reminds me of those old animated cartoons like the Justice League cartoons and the Batman cartoons.
People, not saying this person does, but I feel like you get it from both ways. Like, and if it's animation's too clean and it's too relied on computer graphics, and people, you know, yearn for the older aesthetic. So
yeah, right. Yeah, so for the most part, I thought it looked good. This question here from Eddie. Nolan is a deeply sympathetic character, given his heinous acts revolve around protecting his children. Thoughts? Yeah, that's Eddie, I referenced your question earlier in the review because I agree with that. Obviously, he went to an extreme on Earth, but we see it with the Thraxans as well. He's trying to save this planet of people that their lives are only 1 year of Earthlings' lives. Not only does he care for inferior life when it comes to strength, but even people whose lives are so condensed that they're only going to be there for a year, he cares for those lives too. So yeah, no, it always comes from a place of fear of losing somebody that he loves, because that was the whole thing why he spazzed out on Mark. Once again, took it way too far, but it came down to that quote he has at the end, that question that he has for Mark at the end. What are we going to have after all these centuries of being alive? He's just going through a lot when it comes to his existential dread. And yeah. And I'm interested to see if the new child that he had with Andressa becomes, you know, a superpowered fighter as well. But I agree. Yeah. That is what makes Omni-Man. That's the big difference between Omni-Man and Homelander. Homelander's just so fucked up. He's beyond redeemable.
People thinking that, like, you always see tweets like, oh, Homelander redemption arc is going to hit crazy. People are like, what are you watching?
Yeah, it's a SpongeBob meme. Like, how do we tell him? That's not going to happen, buddy.
Or even like Bleacher Report a few weeks back, they're like, CJ Stroud has arrived. And it was him Photoshop looking like Homelander. It's like, yo, did they even watch the show?
Yeah. Homelander would be furious to see CJ Stroud Photoshopped as him.
Well, I think that's what makes like good, compelling villains.
Can we sue them?
That's what makes like good, compelling villains is when you can be like, yeah, I can kind of, you know, don't agree. You're handling it the wrong way, but there's something there that I think is relatable of what I think most people would strive for, or put in a situation where it's like, protect your family with everything you got. They would do it, but not everyone is fucking Omni-Man.
Yeah. And I think even in, you know, when he's having moments of doubt, when they're fighting against the Viltrumites and he's like, why do I even care about these people? And once again, he goes back to strangling Mark. They're like Homer and Bart. And Mark's like, this is how you were supposed to feel on Earth. And that sort of brings him back down.
Homer just be fucking choking the life out of that
for no reason at all. I love that whole controversy when they said that Homer wasn't going to choke Bart anymore and people got so upset and they were like, no, we were just kidding. I love that meme where somebody's looking at the calendar and the next month is 1984. That's everybody was quoting that meme over Homer won't choke Bart anymore. I thought this was America. But yeah, like I said, with Omni-Man, it does make him very sympathetic, because even him asking those questions out loud, why should I care? It shows you that he does care. So the Omni-Man redemption arc, I mean, I don't think this is the end of Omni-Man. He gets taken back in Viltrumite custody. He has his back broken. So how are we breaking him out, right? Who? Maybe that's where Battle Beast comes back into the picture. Yo, I need help breaking out my dad.
I would love just a season of a fucking courtroom drama.
Oh, of Omni-Man being court-martialed? Okay, let's look for another question. This one here from Lord Marco. Does the show make you guys more or less interested in the proposed live-action Invincible movie? I think it makes me more interested. I think animation is the best way to tell these stories. I've said that for a long time on these videos, that these comic books should be adapted, I think, more times verbatim into animated series. But I'm excited for the Invincible show. And I think, yeah, this show has just made me really love the world. So if somebody has a way to tell that in live action that's as satisfying as the comic has been for so many people and now the animated series, yeah, I'm down for that. I don't mind it.
Is that like a thing that's happening?
It's something that's confirmed. It's in pre-production. But that was announced, I think, shortly after season one, and Kirkman would be involved with it. And I think when it comes to, you know, when we talk about anime to live action, people always say you don't need to do that. And I agree with that. But there's something to, can you pull this off in live action? And as somebody who thinks animation is the superior medium, I'm a little curious about that, too. I'm a sucker for it, too. Like, yeah, can this be done with real people in our world? I think that's why we do it, because there's an intrigue there. Can you pull off Harry Potter? Can you pull off Dune? For a long time, people said you couldn't, and then Villeneuve did it. So it's always unfilmable until somebody does it.
Yeah. I would want to give it some time. And it doesn't sound like anything's moving forward too quickly with this project, but especially to see how spaced out and how long the animated series is going to take. I think we have time. We can visit this later down the road.
This question here from Cody Stereo. Do you guys agree that the animation is pretty ugly? Also, thoughts on The Walking Dead? So I think the ugly animation can have charm to it. There's a movie out streaming on Amazon starring SRK, legendary Indian actor. It's essentially Mission Impossible 2. And it's got some really ugly and crummy looking CGI. But I think that was the point. It's supposed to be campy. It's supposed to be goofy. So you don't mind it, because the movie itself is really well written and everybody's sexy and everybody's kicking ass. And I think that it's got the same charm here when it comes to their animation style, where, yeah, it is a little crummy looking. But as I said, I think that's part of the charm.
I don't think it's crummy. I just think that's just a stylistic choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like crummy animation is like lazy or just bad, like because either not enough resources were allocated towards that, or there was corners cut or things like that. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, like early seasons of Family Guy, where the animation was at times unwatchable because just things were just poorly drawn.
I used to always say it to you, like once there was a point where Family Guy got too well animated and I thought it took away from it. I'm like, this isn't funny anymore. And I could never explain why.
No, there was way less movement in their animations. Everything became stiller. And the characters just became, you know, when one character, you know, in the old Family Guy, when characters talk, they move their arms, they move their head, their facial expressions changed. And they lost some of that personality when they upgraded the animation.
Unrelated, but I saw this on Twitter yesterday and it made me appreciate American Dad so much more. Just the bit where Roger is always...
That's so funny, dude.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when they were at the clown lessons. Like apparently this guy's the strictest clown teacher in the it's gonna be Roger, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like oh, I know a guy that can do this. It's like, is it gonna be you, Roger? It's like, yeah, good. There's a good possibility of that,
dude. There's an episode where Steve is trying to rob his friend's bar mitzvah, so they're putting together a heist team, and Roger's his number two. And he's like, I know a guy. He's the best driver in the country. And they walk into a bar and it's Roger playing pool. He's like, you guys need a car. So he literally does it. Like, he'll talk about somebody else and it's just him.
So stupid, but it's so fucking funny.
He is one of the best characters in television history.
When he popped up in the Family Guy Star Wars.
They're like, we ran out of characters.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I could talk about Roger and American Dad all day. All right, this question here, not an invincible question, but fun to talk about. PhotoFox64 asks, what do you guys think about Silver Surfer being gender swapped? Did you hear about this?
No.
I think that's something that they're floating. So
Anya Taylor-Joy?
Is that who they're saying it's going to be?
I saw her, like, was going to play a villain. Like, she was being eyed to play a villain in Fantastic Four.
Could be interesting.
Silver Surfer kind of villain here. Like, you know, changes. But maybe that could be alluding to that.
Yeah, I'm of two opinions when it comes to these topics. The first opinion is, I don't give a fuck. The second opinion is, I think there is something to, and it's tough because when you make these arguments, you get grouped in with people that are doing it in bad faith. Like, they're like, oh, Silver Surfer, a woman, what's next? JFK as a woman? Should we get Natalie Portman to play JFK as well as Jackie? But I think there is something to, like, if I'm a woman and I see this news and I'm like, that kind of feels just lazy. It's like they're just catering to me in a way that it's just not coming from a place. No. Like somebody like Miyazaki, most of his movies, there's a female lead, right? And I think that's just because that's how he's told his stories. You know, you're not being, nobody's saying, oh, woke Miyazaki, always with a, you know, a female lead. So, but when Marvel does it, when these corporations do it, yeah, it always feels like they're patting themselves on the back.
That's the thing. It's like, if it's a genuine artistic choice, then I think that's
like, it
fine.
Feels like they're in a room like, from, how do we get women to like us? Oh, make Silver Surfer a woman. Genius.
Yeah. It is very, Larry David and Wanda Sykes do a great bit about that in Curb. When it's basically just saying, you know, a bunch of people patting themselves on the back. I feel like when that's a studio decision rather than an artist decision, I feel like that's how you can tell if it's genuine or not. You know, if you have a established filmmaker and they have a vision for something and they make that choice and this is the right character, this is the right actor, then it kind of is like, I feel like it's not as, I guess, what's the word?
Yeah, no, it doesn't feel like pandering.
Yeah, I had a better word, but I couldn't think of it. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's not, it feels more of a genuine thing than just, you know, kind of, like you said, patting yourself on the back, a fake kind of inclusion, you know?
Right, right. But the reason why I start with opinion number one is I can never be mad at these choices because it always sets off the worst people on the internet. And I never want to be a part of that group. That's why I'm always in support of it. Like, yeah, make JFK a woman, make Silver Surfer a woman, because it's more important to me to piss those people off. Because then they go, oh, this is why the MCU is failing. Giving the keys of the MCU to women was the worst financial decision. Blah,
blah. No, it's the it's like a direct the middle crossing of a Venn diagram. It's like that. Like, I hate Brie Larson. I hate Rachel Zegler and all that. Yeah. And it's like, and it puts people like in a weird situation where it's like, man, I didn't like the new Hunger Games movie. But like, I don't want people to think that. It's because, or like the new, if like Snow White comes out, it's like, yeah, I didn't like, this movie sucked. It's because Disney ran into the same problem with all their other live action remakes, and it's just an uninspired bad movie, not because Rachel Zegler said something one time in an interview that I can't get over.
Yeah, I'm really happy for her that she's having this success with the new Hunger Games movie, because people just lit her up for no good reason, dude. And the same thing happened to Brie Larson, and same thing has happened to so many young women in Hollywood, because they simply spoke their mind over an issue that it's not the end of the world when somebody gives a fucking opinion.
That's why I hope it's like, I hope it's not Anya Taylor-Joy, because I really like Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, no, that's
anybody who if they do this, whoever's cast, I immediately am going to be like, oh, that's, I feel so bad. Well, whoever gets cast as Abby in The Last of Us.
Yeah, they were saying Caitlin Denver.
Don't do it.
But like when Will Smith was offered the role of Superman and he said, I'm not trying to piss off white America. Do people not realize it's not the end of the world? Will Smith's had a very lucrative career in Hollywood. He starred in many big movies. But the fact that he doesn't feel comfortable playing a fictional alien from a planet called Krypton because his skin happens to be black and traditionally Superman has been played by white men. I find that very disturbing. Because it's always the people, And I've said this before, that why does everything have to be about race? When we're talking about political issues and social issues, why does everything have to be about race? But God forbid Will Smith is cast as Superman without a huge portion of the population losing their fucking minds over it. Because I have people in my real life often, once again, why is everything about race? And then they'll turn around and say, James Bond can't be a black man. So who's making it about race? That's why I'll always be of the opinion of number one, of who gives a flying fuck. All right, next question.
Is Silver Surfer even like a dude to begin with? He's just a silver thing.
Right, right. Yeah, no, he very much could be just
he probably has some backstory. He's probably Steve Silverberg from Earth something and was a computer engineer until he fell into a surfboard.
This question here from Diego. Just wanted to say I appreciate you guys. Been a big fan since I served in the Marines. Damn, we got a Marine watching us, man. Shout out to Diego. Thank you for watching.
Makes me kind of like a Marine.
This question here from Patriot. Do you think the show is capable of keeping this level of quality throughout the whole story? Just based on history, no. No, I don't believe that. But I hope it does. Keep the whole same quality. Yeah.
I wonder. I haven't read the comics. I really don't know too much about them. So it's like, I wonder if there was, if you ask someone who read the comics, any drop off. If that's the case, then.
I don't know about drop off, but there's definitely a part that people are saying is unfilmable.
Like, because it's graphic or it's just bad?
It's just too much. It's too big. Sort of like One Piece. It's just such a massive arc.
And you can't do it in animation?
Yeah, because you'll need like a million seasons. That there's no way to do it without condensing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the way American animated productions go, unless it's adult animation, you're not looking at 10, 15 seasons. Especially when you're considering the attention. This feels more like a live action audience, if that makes sense. Because of the way that it's presented, 45-minute episodes. Obviously, it's a bit more mature than your average animated content when it comes to like superhero stuff. But yeah, just based on what I've been told from people who have read the comics, I don't think that this is going to end well. Unless they condense it and in a way that's satisfying.
That's disappointing.
This question here from Adam Russell. How many pints before you consider marrying a space cricket? It's funny. We were both stone cold sober and we both said we would. I don't know about marry, but...
No. They only live for a year, right?
Yeah, only for a year.
So, you know.
Hell of a year.
It's not that much of a commitment. It's perfect for people who have commitment issues, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, it really is. Imagine having... If you're a Thraxan and you have commitment issues, you're just... Within a couple minutes, you're just like, this isn't working for me. That always disturbs me when they're like, oh, just 1 year of your life is our entire life. I don't like thinking about that. I don't like time dilation.
You know how many years I've wasted?
I know. Yeah, you've wasted
lifetimes.
Yeah. 30 racks in lifetimes.
Nah. I had a few good years.
Sorry, I was just thinking about myself.
No, you're right, man.
No, dude, seventh grade. God, I was king of the world.
Yeah, I feel like I had a solid 2010.
Oh, my 2010 was really dark. Beginning of my 2010 was epic.
I was about to say me and LeBron, but no, LeBron had a bad 2010.
All right, 2010. I mean, he did kind of flame out, but he won MVP.
Yeah, but 2011, LeBron got that title.
No, 2011, he melted down again against the Mavericks.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, he melted down against Ball. I mean, you can't really melt down against... You know what? Fuck LeBron. I'm not even a LeBron guy anymore. I'm done defending him. I've given him enough. We'll take a few more questions here. This one here from Waddle. Have you, will you read the comics? No. I'm not against it, but I'm probably not.
I can't open anything. I can't make any commitments to anything until I finish One Piece.
That's fair.
Yeah, imagine the Thraxans can't even finish One Piece, or it's going to take like 80% of their life.
I wonder if they can watch it sped up. They're able to process it faster.
Maybe.
That is interesting. Yeah, do they just, you know, they don't read? What do they do? Who cares? All that stuff is probably unnecessary anyway. It's just all like monks.
Yeah, it's probably like kind of peaceful because it's like, oh, retirement? No, I don't have to worry about that. Oh, I got bad credit. Who cares? I'll be dead in 2 months.
Oh, yeah, dude. Their economy is probably just chaotic. so much debt.
11 months old, you take out a loan to be paid back in 2 months. Suckers. It's like in Parks and Rec, the cult is preparing for the end of the world, and Ron Swanson selling them flutes. It's like, yeah, can we pay you tomorrow or in credit? Or no, can I post-date this check? And he's like, yeah. And they start laughing to themselves.
I love how they book the same slot for next year, just in case. That's a funny, wholesome show. This question here from Arzuz. How is it that you have the entire season 2 and I'm only here on episode 3? Rip. We don't have the full season 2. Probably should have addressed that in the beginning. Yeah, nobody does. Yeah, no, we're only doing the first.
I haven't done yet.
It's probably not.
But we'll get the last 4 before, probably too.
Hopefully.
Amazon likes us for some reason.
It's because I'm always buying dude wipes.
On Amazon?
Yeah. All right, we'll take one more question here. This one here from Photo Fox. At what age do Viltrumites stop aging? Mark aged normally into his teens, but Omni-Man's 1,000-plus years old. Yeah, that's always interesting.
Yo, that's always the same thing in all these like fantasy worlds where the people live for so long, but they age normally until to a certain point.
Except yeah, I wonder like Yoda. If he like stay 25 for like 200 years. No, Yoda, I just imagine, was old and busted for most of his life.
I got baby Yoda.
Oh, yeah, right. Little baby Yoda.
He's like 50 years old. And maybe because he's half and half. That would suck. You age like a human, but you live as long as a Viltrumite. You'd be fucking disgusting.
Yeah, just old and saggy for 900 years. I guess maybe Mark's brother, maybe he'll age normally, right? Thraxen, Viltrumite, ages like a human. No, he was sped up a little bit. She was saying they were expecting his first words any day now. No, he couldn't be an adult very soon and become like one of the main characters in the show. Fight alongside Mark.
For the time being.
Dude, that's why go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, mentally he's going to be in his mid-30s, but has to, like, plan his own funeral. Tough life.
I do love the world building in this show because it seems like they're setting up so many potential things, but it breaks my heart because it feels like they're not going to get to a lot of them, or it's going to end in a way that's not satisfying whatsoever. All right, guys, that does it for this review of Invincible Season 2, Episodes 1 through 4. Depending on if we get more questions, we will maybe do a little fan question Patreon pod for this. Yeah, no, we'll be back. What are we going to do next? I'm not sure what we're going to do next. We might do a little movie roundup type of thing because we are getting to the end of the year and we've got all these movies coming out on streaming and in theaters and people are screaming at us like, where the hell is the Napoleon review?
Yeah, I gotta watch. Did you go see that yet?
I did, yeah. I went with my mom day after Thanksgiving. She loves Joaquin Phoenix, so she liked it. I liked it too.
Mixed reviews.
You know, I didn't know that Napoleon was Italian.
Was he?
Yeah.
Did he make that up? He made some shit up. That'd be such a hilarious thing just to make up in your movie. Yeah, Napoleon's Italian.
He was actually Italian.
Well, what was I watching? Oh, no, yeah, it was Gladiator. With the Roman Empire?
Oh, yeah. They were out of control, too. Speaking of Italians.
Because, like, Maximus is Spanish in the movie. And I'm like, well, Spanish? Why is he the general of the Romans? It's like, oh, no. They had all that.
Oh, yeah. No, they had the whole shebang. All the Romance languages are just different types of Latin. All right, guys, that does it for this podcast. We will be back soon with our next episode of Nerd Soup Histories. Need to get Teddy on that. I just love talking history with Teddy because he's always got the funniest perspectives on things.
Yeah, we should do that. Make him just watch some documentary and ask his opinion on everything.
You trying to say the Spanish were Romans? There were no Spanish in Italy.
You know that show Drunk History?
Yeah.
He didn't do that with Teddy, but like he doesn't have the drink or anything.
No, just completely sober. The funniest comment we ever get was we ever got. Somebody asked, "Is Teddy just permanently tripping on mushrooms?"
Wow, that was probably our best review yet. Hey guys, Aaron the Nerd Soup Monkey here with a brief shameless plug before we end the video.
Do you ever feel like you don't have an adequate amount of nerd soup in your life? Like you're going to bed hungry and yearning for the nonsensical yet entertaining nutrients our podcasts provide? Well, we've come up with the perfect solution. The Nerd Soup Fan Question Podcast, exclusively available to our Patreon supporters. You can sign up now by visiting patreon.com/nerdsoup, and for the price of only $1 per month, you'll receive exclusive access to our weekly podcast, where we answer your questions that don't make it to the main show. And while you're there, you can check out the other rewards we offer to our patrons, like stickers, mugs, t-shirts, behind-the-scenes footage, and appearing in the credits at the end of our videos. And that's exactly what we're going to do right now. Roll the names of the nerds who make Nerd Soup possible. The reason why the crypto crash didn't send our lives spiraling down a black hole of no return. Alright, I'll stop talking so you can listen to this jazzy-ass music while checking if Bo spelt your name wrong in the credits.